Welcome to the Snifflecast edition of Daytime Confidential, brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, we're doing a little bit of an unorthodox episode, so stay tuned. Well, folks, it's Luke. Back from having moved and trying to get my life all in shape with the new move, and I came down with a terrible cold. So I'm going to be sniffling my way through this episode. And with me today, I have Nikki, who was on our recent Top 5, the Girls' Night Out episode. I know you guys had a ton of fun visiting on that about your, well, shall we say, guilty pleasures.
Yeah, we had too much fun on that one.
Well, I'm glad you were able to join in on the conversation. Also joining us today is someone who we were talking about it before the podcast, and I think I've known Meredith since 2004. It's been a while now. She is one of the people like Belinda and Mike and Tina and Danielle who, and even Nikki, I guess, that I've known online through various message boards and websites. And it's a pleasure because this is actually our first time having a chance to visit about soaps on the phone / on the air. So welcome to the podcast, Meredith. Even though this much more of an informal format, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. And a pleasure to talk to you both about, you know, one of our favorite subjects. So I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Oh, well,
Meredith and I have actually met in person, so.
Yes, well, I've met Nikki in person, so she's proof of my existence.
And, well, and if I'm not mistaken, you two are fairly good pals online as well when it comes to your commentary. What is your guys' nicknames for each other, or dare I ask?
Well, you have to think back to Watergate and the journalism surrounding that whole fiasco, and you think of Woodward and Bernstein. And because at one site where we visited, we were kind of the writers in-house. They called us Woodward and Bernstein, and over time it shortened to Woody and Bernie. So I am Bernie, and she is Woody.
So if you by chance stumble across a message board where there is a Woody and a Bernie, and they're giving each other a hard time, you may know who these two people are. Though that so totally sounds awful, and I just realized that, and I'm not going to even go there. Nikki, so what do you think of your guys'...
Well, actually, anybody who knows me who's chatted with me in places where I don't have to worry about censoring myself will know that Woody is a very appropriate nickname for me. So
I would agree with that.
Yes. Yes. I'll just leave it at that. Now, moving past that, Meredith, what are your thoughts on this? I mean, you are an ABC soap viewer, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yes, that's right.
And you primarily watch General Hospital, though you have watched One Life to Live and All My Children in the past?
Oh, yes, yes. I used to watch both pretty regularly, but not so much recently.
So what are you watching now?
Well, I can say that I'm watching General Hospital. I should probably put watching in quotes, though, because a lot of my viewership is actually through recaps and through some of the clips that get uploaded to YouTube, because it's been sort of difficult to watch in recent years, so... there's not necessarily the motivation there to stay regular with it.
So Nikki hasn't enticed you to check out Johnny Zakara?
I've checked out Johnny Zakara. I don't necessarily have the same attachment to him that Nikki does, but I certainly am aware of his existence and his unnatural chemistry with his sister, played by
Sarah
Brown.
Yeah, she's more likely to ogle Rick Hurst than...
Oh.
Well, yes. Well, Rick Hurst would be my favorite actor on General Hospital, so.
I see. Now, I should ask this because Nikki and I are known to very rarely, if ever, agree on anything when it comes to soaps.
Yes.
Did you like Rexus?
No,
I was not a big fan of Rexus. I'm not a big Alexis fan, so that was not my favorite pairing. I certainly think that the writing during that pairing was unfortunate for the people who did like them, though, because... I don't know, there were an awful lot of moments where you wondered what the heck the writers were thinking. So.
Yeah, everything sort of went downhill after the Christmas tree caper, after that.
Yeah, the Christmas tree caper, that's
right.
With
the squirrel, I'm telling you.
Yeah, I was a Rexus fan, so everything just sort of went downhill after that, and him doing Stan was pretty much the last straw.
What'd you say, Nikki?
I said, Meredith and I are pretty much lyric fans, so we're going to be ganging up.
It's a mutiny.
So then what are your thoughts on General Hospital today as you see it, whether it be through recaps or YouTube or however it is that you consume your daily dose of General Hospital?
Well, my goodness, where do I start? It's, you know, the show, I mean, to say it would be in bad, to say that it's in bad shape would be a really sad understatement. And I think that, I mean, even if you just look at the ratings every week, they reflect that because I think, I mean, there are several problems and we could probably discuss them for hours, but I think really what it boils down to is the writing. I think that the writing is, you know, a sad state of affairs. And I think that also I think that the canvas is very, very crowded right now and they're trying to divide airtime among a cast that's probably, you know, twice as big as it should be. And instead of, you know, trimming down, they just keep adding new people one at a time. So it's kind of hard to get attached to the new ones, and then you're sad because you don't see your old favorites as much.
So what do you think, then, of the fact that Sonny has relinquished his claim on the mob? And this is for both of you. What do you guys think of the fact that, I mean, I don't think any of us ever expected to see the day where Sonny would actually be, quote-unquote, out of the mob. And for me, it was one of those things where it's like, I mean, he'd be like Charlton Heston, I mean, from like Cold Dead Hands.
Well, right? I can tell you right now that it won't last. There's no way. But I told you the other night, Luke, I think he should be a welcomer or a bag boy at Walmart. I think those would be great jobs for him.
Oh, can you imagine?
Yeah, I'm
not even sure they've actually there's actually ever been a Walmart on an episode of an ABC show, though maybe one time when Babe was on the run with a child there might have been on All My Children, but other than that, I don't think there ever has been.
Well, that's
too bad.
One
that could
thing.
Be lucrative for them.
True, yeah. Considering they do the tie-ins with the Charmed crap.
Yeah, well, there's exactly. That's one thing, Meredith, I think you and I were talking about this one day, where it was being discussed what middle class was, you know, how it was portrayed on soaps. And there's like, I mean, if middle class was actually the way it is portrayed on soaps, I'm living in poverty.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, you have to have money in order to be, I mean, there's not really any families on soaps that are.
No, not
you know,
at all.
Well, you just have to.
You have it like the Vegas on A One Life to Live. You have, you know, they have the family diner, but.
Or the Snyders on As the World Turns, but.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But, well, the thing is, well, you know that they don't have to pay for anything on fuel because they're all hoofing it in their stilettos across
right.
town to from the Metro Court to the, I mean, to the Kellys. I mean.
That's right. Well, I remember a couple of years ago when Liz and Lucky were married, there was this whole, I mean, not, I wouldn't even call it a storyline, more like a plot point that they were, you know, lower to middle, you know, low middle class, that, you know, they had no money, they couldn't afford medical bills, they couldn't afford new boots for Cameron. And I thought it was ridiculous because, I mean, I don't know about where you live, but here, if you're a police officer and a nurse, you're making very good money. And maybe you're not making $1 million a year, but you could certainly live quite comfortably on those two salaries. So,
well, implausible.
Kind of ridiculous.
Let's talk about the fact that his brother is a millionaire, billionaire prince.
That's right.
Very true. Same could be said when you were talking about the Snyders on As the World Turns. I mean, she's Lucinda Walsh's daughter. Lily is.
Yeah, but technically Lily's only a Snyder by marriage.
But you know they're never going to have money problems. I mean, if it came down to it, Lucinda would pay for anything.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
So they have that security blanket.
Or apparently they're having Paul buy them out, which makes absolutely no sense, but we won't go there because Meredith has no clue what we're talking about.
Well, I have sort of a clue. Is Paul played by Roger Haworth?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so I sort of know.
Well, and to go back to One Life to Live, I have to say I did watch when Kathy Barcy was holding Vicky hostage and everybody was talking about, oh my gosh, I can't believe that Vicki Davidson would lower herself to work in a diner. I was like, okay, you are totally, you know, saying that anybody who has to work that kind of job is a lower life form, and that kind of made me a little bit cranky because they were basically dissing the lower class or the middle-lower class.
I don't necessarily, well, maybe the people who you were reading it was, but I mean, I don't know that I would necessarily take it quite that way. I mean, obviously there are different classes in our society. The show has quoted her as being one of the five richest women in America. It does seem a little bit odd that a woman of that stature and influence and who runs a major paper would be slumming it with us, the normal people.
I tried not to. I mean, I minored in sociology, so it's hard for me not to look at a storyline this way. But I think that really the whole point of that, I mean, it was a really lame and contrived way to introduce a whole slew of new characters. You know, you had Gigi coming in, and you had, you know, all of the restaurant staff coming in. So, I mean, you know, again, it's really hard for me not to look at it that way. But I didn't really take offense to it. I mean, because I guess I could see why the characters would be surprised that Vicky was working in a diner, but I understood why the writers did it, even though I don't necessarily think it was the best approach.
So did either of you actually like the Texas stuff? Because I loved it.
You know, I thought it was, you know, it wasn't bad. It wasn't as bad as I thought it could have been. I don't mind Gigi. I'm not necessarily, you know, gung-ho about her because she hasn't been around long enough yet. But, you know, I thought, you know, she was a good addition to the cast.
That's one of your new favorites, though, isn't it, Luke?
Oh, well, I've been a fan of Farrah Fast since Days of Our Lives, so this is not new for me. To me, this is just seamless transition. Now, that having been said, though, I thoroughly enjoyed it because I think that what they did in Paris, Texas, was allowed Vicky to reinvent herself or reinvigorate herself. For so long, everything that about Vicky had been defined by her children or by Dorian or whatever may be the case, that finally you had this woman, this strong, independent woman who in many respects had forgotten about it, basically doing whatever she wanted on her own terms and not letting the influences of her publishing company, her family, who are, by the way, grown adults and who don't really necessarily need her the way they think they do. And it, to me, I just thought it was a resurgence in the character. Totally love that whole period of time. And in fact, I think it was sort of the beginning of One Life to Live's turnaround. And I think it's just been uphill ever since.
You know, I would agree with you. And I think it was really, it was nice to see her find romance again, because she certainly had an unlucky run of it. I mean, you know, her Ben died and she got his heart. And then you had, you know, her on again, off again romance with Clint. But of course, Clint was being bounced from, you know, Dorian to like Nora, so she was kind of on the periphery there. So it's been really nice for her to, you know, to see a new romance brewing for her because, you know, of course, she's one of my favorite characters on the show. So I always like to see it when things are going well for her.
I can agree with that. I don't watch the show as much as you two, so I don't have a lot to go on, but...
Well, we're recording this on a Friday night, and I don't know if, Meredith, you had a chance to actually watch Friday's episode, but in a way, today's episode was sort of a culmination... are not necessarily a culmination, but a continuance of the Paris, Texas storyline where you had Marcy trying to get the little child back because of the fact that Todd had let them ride in the front seat and it was in court and they tried. And then she had some like just gut-wrenching scenes in the bathroom on the floor crying with Michael. I just want to make sure I have this correct. Michael McBain, her husband, comforting her, and then Star walks out of the bathroom stall having heard all this, and it to me it was just, boy, they know how to just take things that have happened in the past, and even though it's been a while, build on them, and it just seems so good to be able to see that.
And that is a perfect example, a slap to the, you know, people of why, you know, Kathy Breyer should have gotten an Emmy nomination and didn't.
Oh, God. Look, those Emmy nominations. Yeah. Okay. Meredith, what were you going to say?
Let me try to remember. What was I going to say? You know what? Go ahead. I'll think of it.
It was just about, we were just discussing the Friday's performance with Kathy Breyer and Star seeing what had taken place and building upon it is where I left off. But if that helps you any.
I was going to use that to jump off and say something about soaps in general.
Okay.
When you have cumulative storytelling like that, I mean, that's really what soaps want because, I think especially with General Hospital, that's the one I watch the most, so I certainly see it the most there. You just have these stories, and it's like you're leaping from plot point to plot point, and you know, there are scenes, there are sometimes throwaway scenes that probably were going somewhere, but then there was a last-minute rewrite, so they make no sense. You have, I mean, you have so many different writers writing throughout the week, you'll have a character say one thing and say the complete opposite the next day. And that's one of the nice things about One Life to Live, is that you have these storylines, and it's not just, you know, bang, 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 and they're done, you know, and they're not just sweep stunts. You have this character development over time, and it's nice to see character-driven writing like that again, because we certainly don't have that on General Hospital right now.
It's also nice to see resolutions to stories, you know, because they'll start some major thing on General Hospital and never finish it. You know, bring up something and then completely drop it, and we're like, okay, we're waiting for the punchline.
Yep.
Where's this going?
Well, how long has it been, and we still have no clue what was in the box left at the Quartermain Mansion? I mean, whatever happened to Ida? Or just
what happened to Ida?
Yeah, or a few of
exactly.
Yeah, all of these loose ends. And of course, you know, well, they'll never answer them. So we just kind of they leave us to our own devices to make up whatever happened.
So then, on a lighter note, Nikki revealed who her favorite hunk is on General Hospital. She said that it might be Rick for you.
Yeah, Rick would be my favorite.
There's also Greggy, though. We can't,
we can't
disinclude Greg Vaughn.
Of course. Of course. It's too bad that the show doesn't appreciate him more.
So if you had to choose between those two, who would you pick?
I would pick Rick, because he's just my favorite actor on the show. He's my favorite actor in soaps right now. So.
Now, are you voting for either of them on Soap Hunks in a doc 2008?
Yeah, Rick's not in it, but is Greg still in it?
He is. This is actually his week for semifinals, and I really shouldn't be propping him because that goes against Murray, and that's bad. Bad.
I'm not propping him. I'm asking if they're voting for people who are of interest in the thing. I'm not propping anyone. I'm taking the conversation where it goes. I am in no way, shape, or form trying to bias those things.
Well, this is Greg Vaughn is in this week's semifinals for Adonis 2008. Brandon Barash is already out of it. So Johnny Zakhar is not in the finals. He's already had his week of semifinals, and he didn't make it. So Steve Burton's in. Big yawn. But Greg Vaughn, I'm sure, will probably be in the finals. I would probably bet money on it, but yeah.
For All My Children.
All My Children.
Yes. Did you watch back in the day when Angie and Jesse the first time were around?
No, the first time around. When was the first time around? In the mid-80s?
We were all little kids, I think.
It was before my time. I was a toddler. I was going to say, I don't know like how old you are, so I apologize if I'm doing that inappropriately, but I was just wondering what you think of their return.
Well, actually, their return, you know, I didn't see them the first time around because, again, I was very, very young. I don't even know when in the 80s it was, so, but I mean, either way, I was a baby or a toddler. But the train station, all of the scenes that transpired there, it was awesome because I didn't have to see them the first time around for them to be poignant because the acting was just so good. And it was, I mean, it's nice to see on-location shoots because God knows General Hospital doesn't have them anymore beyond the occasional parking lot. So they were just beautiful scenes. The acting was great. And even if you hadn't seen it the first time around, you just had this kind of intangible sense of the history that was there. And I guess all of the promos leading up to it didn't hurt either. So I really, really did enjoy those scenes.
Did you watch their wedding?
No, you know, I'm that far behind on All My Children. I haven't seen their wedding.
Well, both of you, this is one for you. Considering someone on this podcast was taking pot shots at me in the Girls Night Out episode about a certain turn of Rebecca Buttig, and I'm pretty sure the person's name doesn't start with M. What did you think of the Real Greenlee campaign and the return of Rebecca Buttig?
Do you want to take this one, Nikki, or should I go first?
Let's let Meredith go first. Nikki's in the doghouse.
Yeah, Meredith,
a few minutes.
Well, okay. I actually really liked Sabine Sims Greenlee. Of course, nothing is going to be like the original, especially when you have somebody playing the character as long as Rebecca Buttig did. But I really actually got attached to the pairing of Greenlee and Aiden while Sabine Sims was on, and it felt like she was in and she was out, and the way that they promoted Rebecca Buttig's return, I just thought it was unprofessional. And then reading that post. There was a post that surfaced on some message board, and one of Sabine's friends had written it, talking about how poorly they had treated her. And it was later verified that the post was legitimate. And it was just sad for me to hear that because she worked so hard and she gave so much, and the least they could have done was given her a nice send-off and not necessarily gone about it in the backhanded way that they did. So it was something that definitely made me angry at the time.
And you're not a fan now of Rebecca Buttig's chemistry with Aiden Turner?
It's not that I'm not a fan. I just think that the writing changed once she came back because, certainly they've been together a long time since she came back. I wasn't expecting them to last this long. But I feel like that they've been kind of propelled in other directions, even though they're technically still together. But I'm behind now, so I honestly can't speak, authoritatively.
Can I come out of the doghouse and say something?
Yes.
Yes.
When she came back, I was really annoyed with the turn the show took because with Greenlee and Aiden and Kendall and Zach and Ryan and Annie, it's like they were playing musical partners.
Yeah.
You at the end of every episode, you were going, I wonder who's going to end up with who today? And they basically couldn't pick a route and go with it. And I think that they're trying too hard to throw Kendall and Greenlee both back in with Ryan, instead of, letting them progress or whatever. Now, I'm a Ryan Kendall fan, so that's hard for me to say, but it's too late. It's gone. I don't see why they don't just pick something and go with it. Now, they could kill off Annie for all I care. I don't like her, but.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, I don't.
That's one thing we agree on, Luke. That's like on our list of five things we agree on the planet. So
yeah, and make that three of us actually. Not that I don't hate her, but I just don't see much of a use for her.
Well, the reason that they brought her back is because when they premiered her as a Greenlee clone because Rebecca Buttig wasn't interested in returning at that time. Annie came onto the scene, bombed. So then they brought on Sabine Singh as Greenlee, which had mediocre results. I mean, some people liked her, other people didn't. And then they brought the real Greenlee back. I mean, there's really no point in Annie even being on the show now that Rebecca Buttig is back as Greenlee. Because she was just, Annie was a Greenlee clone for all intents and purposes.
Sure.
I will not shed a tear when she's gone.
No, I won't shed a tear either. And I just think general, she's a really lackluster character. There's just no spark there for me, so I certainly wouldn't shed a tear either. Because I think that there are plenty of other veteran characters and, other main characters on there who could certainly use the airtime.
Well, and the thing that got me is when Annie and Ryan were getting married, I don't remember which character was, but some character told Annie when she was feeling all insecure, "You're the only real love of Ryan's life." And I'm going, okay. Ouch, you just kicked the Greenlee Ryan fans, you kicked the Kendall Ryan fans, and then go all the way back to Jillian.
Oh yeah, Jillian was the last time that I even liked Ryan, because Jillian and Ryan were almost
irreplicable. If Jillian was around. Yeah.
Okay, I have absolutely no clue whatever happened to that actress, but is there any way, now that we've seen Jesse come back from the dead, I don't think it's too much to ask that say that Jillian can return and get the heart out of Laura and somehow come back to life.
That's right, because where's Laura anyway? So.
Exactly. We could just ignore the fact, Brooke isn't on. We can just ignore the fact that Laura ever existed. It could have been a Jillian clone. She could have been held hostage by Helena. It doesn't take too much to figure this all out. Let's just get Jillian back. Needs a little bit of class.
Yep, they could be a big inter-soap event. Helena has been holding Jillian on the island for all these years.
Well, it might make more sense than some of these people. She'd be a rival royalty. At least that would make sense a little bit.
Yeah.
But
isn't that what we're doing these days, just grasping for something that makes even a little bit of sense on these shows?
In many respects, yes, but I want to get back to Nikki's comment for a moment because I think that you had a good point with the musical chairs, but at the same time, more so than even Greenlee being paired up with anybody that I was really looking forward to was the Greenlee-Kendall dialogue because it had such great dialogue under McTavish. It was one of the few things that McTavish did right. They had great dialogue. And
one of my go ahead.
And it's finally started coming back in recent times, but boy, it was a rough patch when she first got back, and it just hasn't quite been the same. And so to me, I think that when it comes down to it, the writers should be realizing that their biggest super couple, well, not necessarily super couple, but they need to forget Kendall and Ryan, or Greenlee and Ryan, or Kendall and Zach, or Greenlee and Zach. What they really got to do is figure out a way to reinvent Greenlee and Kendall so that we keep our interest in them, because they could be the next Vicky and Dorian, or Lindsay and Nora. There's a way to do it, but sometimes these two are as tired and as boring to listen to as Scrubs are on General Hospital every time they start arguing or every time they start debating some minute fact.
Well, you know, one of my favorite of all time Kendall Greenlee times was when Kendall was pregnant and, you know, we thought it was with Greenlee and Ryan's baby. Like, my favorite moment was when they're in what is now Crystal's place. And Greenlee gets up on stage and sings, she's having my baby. I laughed so hard. That was such a perfect moment. And they had such great dialogue, as you were saying, during that time when, before it all came out that it was Kendall's baby with Ryan. They had such great dialogue in there. It would be hard to repeat that because it was near perfect.
Well, and here's a question I have for you. I mean, and not to make this a Greenlee fest, because it could quickly become one. Do you think that they would have actually written the baby as Kendall's if Rebecca Buttig hadn't left and if they hadn't tried to give her a really major exit storyline?
I don't know on that one.
They still might have. I mean, I don't know, because it was such a dramatic revelation, you know, finding out that it was, you know, it was indeed Kendall's baby. It was such a supreme, not an act of betrayal, though certainly it was perceived that way by some. But I think that they might have still done it just to go for the drama and to keep Kendall and Greenlee interesting, because I think making it Greenlee's would have been poignant as well, but I think going for that shock value, I think that it was, you know, it made sense for them to make it Kendall's because they needed to do something dramatic, something that people didn't expect.
So that we don't turn this into a Greenlee fest, what other topics do you want to discuss this evening? Or today,
I would love to discuss Chuck Pratt coming to All My Children as their new head writer.
Okay. Take it away.
Okay. You know, I'm really nervous about this, actually, because I think that while the ratings don't reflect it, I think, you know, All My Children has been on an upswing, especially in the last year or so. You know, of course, there are certain storylines that I would accept from that. But
such as the pole dancing?
Yeah, the pole dancing. That doesn't rank highly with me. And, of course, the whole Real Greenlee campaign, that was not a favorite moment of mine either. But all I can do is remember Chuck Pratt's time on General Hospital and, you know, wonder if it's going to be the same, you know, same kind of thing, because some of the storylines that transpired and unfolded during his reign on General Hospital were certainly, I guess I could say interesting to be kind, but awful would probably be the more honest word.
Yeah, I am not holding my breath. In fact, I would encourage anybody who is to take a deep breath right now, because you have no hope of surviving on one breath. I just cannot imagine how this show is going to be written.
One thing I'm looking forward to, this coming from me being a Guiding Light fan, is I am really looking forward to seeing what they give Ricky Paul Golden to work with, because he's amazing. And no matter what they give him, he's going to be awesome. So I can't wait to see if they use his talent or if they waste it.
Joining that he's going to be paired with Beth Ellers.
Oh, obviously. Obviously, just because you can't beat that, you can't write that kind of chemistry. You know, they could sit there and read the phone book and look good together. So
I hope that that does work, because, you know, I'm thinking back to the time when they brought what is it, Mary Beth Evans on as Catherine on General Hospital, and, you know, hoped that they could recapture that whole Steve and Kayla dynamic with Stefan and Catherine. And it didn't necessarily work out so well, so I'm hoping that All My Children doesn't mess it up.
Well, can
General Hospital's doing the same thing, trying to recreate Kirsten Storms and Jason Cook.
Yeah, that's so right.
Well, and can I just say something about Ricky Paul Golden? It's one of those things where you forget how important the filming styles of these shows are. I had become so accustomed to guiding light taking and filming everything so close up that you don't really notice differences in height.
He's short.
And then I was watching this last week where they were in the hospital or at the wedding, one of the two, and he's standing next to, like, Adam, and it's like, okay, I did not realize that he was this short, and this is nothing discriminatory against Ricky Paul Golden because, hell, we'd love to have him on the podcast, but and to visit with him about his time on both Guiding Light and All My Children, but at the same time, it was just one of those things where it's like, okay, I did not realize this.
I found the same thing. You know how I'm loving Sean Christian on Days of Our Lives. And granted, James Scott is a very tall man, but they were standing close together in a scene the other day, and I was like, holy crap, Sean Christian's really short. And if you put him next to Nick, Blake Barris, I think is the actor's name, on Days, he looks so short. They need to stop putting Chelsea in shoes that have high heels on him, because he's not that tall. Really good looking, but not that tall.
Well, it was just one of those like observations. I mean, I don't know if it doesn't have any bearing on anything, but it was just to me when I saw it, it's like, wow, it's amazing what a difference a filming style makes.
He looks better on All My Children too. The filming style makes him more attractive, I think.
Not for nothing, but then, of course, is coming reports that supposedly Guiding Light is way over budget. If they're way over budget on this type of filming style, which supposedly was going to save them a fortune and get it renewed, and we have as many problems as we do, and the writing hasn't stepped up, this show is in big trouble.
That would be such a tragedy.
Did I not rant about that on the Girls' Night Out thing? Seriously. Get Ellen Wheeler out of there. Get David Kreisman out of there. Get new blood in, you know, and maybe they can restore Guiding Light to some semblance of the amazing show it used to be.
But how
but
do you
they're
back?
Losing their main people. They're losing their cast because the cast's going – I mean, they're talking – the cast has been talking to magazines, whether it's been anonymously or Kim Zimmer flat out coming out and saying, this is a joke, you know. We say they're, if the cast is openly stating their dislike of what's going on, then and not really caring if it costs them their job, then that's not good.
Well,
right. It means they probably see the forest for the trees, so they know whether they say anything or not. The show is in such major trouble.
Well, and then of course is coming word that Katie McClain is a major front runner for the role of Harley.
Please tell me they're not recasting. Aww.
That is one of the words. That was what Nelson Bronco reported on TV Guide Canada. I was like, you know, I would not wish Guiding Light on Katie McClain at all.
Look, that ruins all my plans. Why are you telling me this? I had all these ideas in my head of what they could do with that show now that Harley's gone.
The problem is, and I hate to get into Guiding Light because it's one of those things where we're sort of excluding Meredith, but they shot themselves in the foot by getting rid of people that were fan favorites, and then the ratings dropped because of that, and so as a result they had to take other steps to try and get the ratings up in form of cost cutting, which led to the filming style that we have,
which is atrocious,
and is causing even more viewer declines, which is then leading to the big name actors leaving en masse because they want to get a job before the entire show goes out. And every Guiding Light actor is on the market because let's face it, people thought that a whole lot more Another World actors would be picked up when that show was canceled, and there aren't that many of them that made the jump to other soaps.
Well, let's talk about the two main problems on Guiding Light. First is character assassination. They have taken characters that have been on that show forever and made them unrecognizable. They don't talk the same. They don't act the same. Harley's an amazing example of that. She's no longer the Harley anybody knew. And then the dialogue. There is no dialogue. One of the main things that one of the actors pointed out anonymously in one of the soap opera weeklies is that their scripts have been cut practically in half, and all they basically do is sit there and stare at the wall or do laundry while music's playing in the background.
Not for nothing. Not my friend.
Montages.
Not for nothing, my friend, but it does not take an actor saying that to be able to point that out.
Yeah, I know, but what I'm saying is they're going, okay, we're not basically doing anything. They've got the easiest job on the planet. They just go and they sit there.
Well, and there's a whole lot of implausibility but with it. I mean, who in the world expects Alan Spaulding and Dinah Maller, who are taking and supposedly two corporate titans duking it out over Spaulding? What is it going to be? Spaulding, what is the other company?
Spaulding Lewis now.
Lewis, Spaulding Lewis, on a baseball diamond when no one else is around. I mean,
yeah, exactly. Okay. And, I mean, another thing is I understand they wanted to make the show more, quote unquote, and yes, I'm doing the finger quotes in the air, realistic. But if I wanted to watch somebody do laundry, I'd sit there and watch my mom. She does it a lot. Or if I wanted to watch...
If we wanted to watch someone pay our bills, we could video ourselves and put them on YouTube.
And people do.
I mean, seriously, the whole point of soaps, at least in my opinion, is awesome romances. Then, and I'm not talking a romance which is basically they don't talk, they just have sex all the time, which is all Cyrus and Harley seem to do, which is nauseating and exhausting. So a great romance. I like a little adventure in my stories. You know, I don't like the whole supernatural stuff that, like, Passions did, but, you know, like, somebody get taken hostage and then get rescued by the love of their life. That's great soap right there, you know? And
when it's written well.
Yeah. I understand realism being a part of soaps and making soaps more realistic, but it's a TV show, which is fiction, which is get somebody outside of real life. You know, somebody doesn't want to be reminded that they have to do their laundry all the time or that they have to bake cookies. They want to, you know, watch a little bit of something adventurous, get them, you know, excited about something, and it's just not cutting it right now.
No, it's not cutting it. And actually, you brought up a point about romances and how basically now everyone's just falling into bed with everybody else. And I think I was saying this to you the other night, but when you look at General Hospital, I mean, does anybody date anymore? You used to have, you know, people would go to the Outback, people would go to Luke's, they'd, you know, have all these cute little dates, and, you know, it would be a big deal when they would have sex. It would be a big deal when they had their first kiss. But now it's like, sex now, think later. And it certainly works with some pairings that are a little more visceral in nature, but you know, I kind of miss dating. I like, you know, going to, not All My Children, One Life to Live, and seeing people going to Ultraviolet, people going out and having a good time. And I think that's really sorely lacking on General Hospital right now.
And did you at all watch Adriana's Wedding?
No, and it's funny because I meant to. It was just, you know, something came up and I didn't watch it. But they actually went through with it, didn't they?
Yeah, they did, which was sort of a shocker.
Yeah, that is a shocker.
Before we wrap up, either of you have any final topic you want to discuss?
Not that I can think of right now.
Okay.
Not that I can think of either. I think we've tackled certainly an awful lot.
Oh, well, that's how the podcasts tend to go.
How you roll.
That seems to – well, we end up seeming to tackle a lot of things. But it has been a pleasure, Meredith, having you on the podcast as a guest. We appreciate it so much. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, Nikki, it's been a pleasure having you with us. I think you'll be joining us for a top five coming up, and I know you're going to be subbing for Jamie on the CBS podcast in the next month or so. Well, he is actually moving, so
Men with Mommy Issues?
Men with Mama Issues.
Yes!
I can think of a few on General Hospital.
Oh, well, there's one that just, I mean, might as well be the number one for everybody, no matter if you don't watch the soap or not. Which I think will be on everybody's list, if not at number
probably.
One. And that would be, oh, can't say it on the air because it would give it away. We thank you for listening, folks. Until next time, so long.